Hello and welcome to All About Brahma Kumaris. My name is Magla Pillay. I'm a judicial officer from South Africa. I have here in the studio with me today Brahma Kumari Denise, who's been practicing Raj Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. And we have taken up various subjects on the show that are of interest to practicing Brahma Kumaras and Kumaris, as well as to you, the viewer. Today's subject of conversation is that of money. We realize that money has its importance in one's life, but today we look at what role money plays in the life of one who leads a spiritual life. Brahma Kumaris and Kumaras allowed to work? Can they work? Can they give up their job to live at a center full-time? What is their relationship with money, and how does the Brahma Kumaris as a community function within India as well as globally? To answer these questions, we have Sister Denise, who was joining us today. Thank you, Sister Denise, and very warm welcome.
Thank you, Magla.
What role does money play, not in generally, but for somebody who leads a spiritual life?
Well, I think that money is one of the three important things. We have tan, man, and han. So tan is the body, you need that. Man is the mind, you need that. And han is money, you need that. Money, not just money, but all forms of wealth. We live in a material world, but spirituality will ask a person to really think about how they're using their money. So one of the things is we have to have value for our time, our thought, and our money, because these are very important components that are part of human life. And we were talking earlier on another occasion about karma. And so the karma that you do with your money and to get your money also is calculated in the whole question of the laws of karma. So it's very important.
Why is it that so many Brahma Kumaras and Kumaris across the globe, especially in India, are unemployed?
I don't know whether that's true.
Okay, must I rephrase the question? Within the Brahma Kumaris, it is quite common to see at the center that there's somebody who's not working, but who lives and runs the center full time.
Well, that's a different thing.
Okay, then I phrased the question wrongly. So how does, who looks after such a person financially?
You know, the Brahma Kumaris operates in the very same manner as the very traditional ancient extended family system. And so the money in an extended family is pooled. So in the traditional way, the women are not expected to work and in many cases discouraged from working, because women traditionally look after the inside and men are out in the world creating money to sustain the home and the family. And so the Brahma Kumaris works very much like this, although nowadays there are quite a lot of women who work. There are even sisters who are dedicated, living in the center, and who also work. So we have that now, but traditionally they wouldn't be. So we call ourselves a family. It's a very large family, and the headquarters of the Brahma Kumaris, Mount Abu, is really like the ancestral home, and everyone comes here. We use our own money to sustain the sacrificial fire. We call this the yagya, the sacrificial fire, which is the home, the place where we do our spiritual practice. And we use our body, which is also a resource, our mind, our assets, to fulfill the aim of this sacrificial fire, this organization, this community, which is to transform the world from vice-based to virtues based, from materialistic to spiritual. And so people who are living in the centers, they usually are the sisters. There are some brothers too. Some of them may be full-time actively doing service in the center. Some of them may be out there creating money and doing a service part-time in the center. So there's every variety. But the thing is with money is it should be used well. It should not be wasted. It should be acquired through, as far as possible, pure means. So there are many type of jobs that we wouldn't do as far as possible. You know, we wouldn't work in the meat industry, in the alcohol industry, in the sex industry. There are a few in the entertainment industry, but otherwise the entertainment industry is also very involved with what we call the vices. So also the money that we have, we're very particular about being economical and frugal so that we don't spend money for unnecessary things or for luxuries or for what's not needed. But you can see that our lifestyle is very adequate, comfortable enough. We are not excessive, but we are also not denying ourselves, but somewhere in the middle.
It's not very easy to achieve that balance, though, is it?
Well, it's all part of spirituality, which is all about many different kinds of balance. So financial probity is a good quality.
Okay. You have somebody who's living outside of India, who's practicing all the Brahmakumari principles, and he comes to the center daily. Is there a rules regarding the percentage of his income that he has to contribute to the center? Is it communicated by the one running the center how much he should contribute, or is it left to every individual?
Even on that, there's a big variation. Generally, when somebody becomes very regular and they're taking a lot of benefit and they want to participate, then we'll put it to that person that it's nice if they want to contribute to the upkeep of the center so that others can take benefit. And so some people even ask, you know, what percentage is good? So sometimes, especially in the long ago times when we were more into the details of this than now, it would be said you divide your income in five sections, so that one part would be for your basic living and another part for your rent, or you know that accommodation is usually quite a lot these days, one part for the center, one part saving, one part for service projects or whatever, or contribution to the headquarters or for travel or something like this. And then within that rather overview of a framework, then an individual will work out what they're going to do. And that works very well.
So if someone is living at the center, do they give their entire salaries to the Brahmakumaris?
Again, they will look at it. They will work it out with the person who is coordinating the center, and they will negotiate. They will arrive at what seems comfortable for that person, and they will do it like that.
So there's no compulsion on anyone to give this amount, this percentage of your salary or otherwise?
No, you know, there are some traditions, some religious traditions where you're tithed, like in Christianity you have a tithe, which is, I think it's about 10%, right? Mm-hmm. And in Judaism it's very much clearly mentioned. Mm. So Islam is one-fifth. Mm. In Hindu tradition, it's very, very common that whenever you go to the temple, whenever you go to the ashram, you will put something, whenever you eat there, you will put something. So that's the tradition. And so people tend to follow something like what their original faith tradition is. And again, it can vary also.
If someone comes to the center and they're already struggling financially, what is your advice to such a person to in order for them to end their negative account with money?
Well, first of all, if a person is struggling financially and they tell us, I'm struggling financially, what can I do? Then we'll say to them, well, look at your account. What's coming in, what's going out, how much are you paying for all the various things that you're paying for? And generally, people who are struggling financially, they don't keep their account. So we do encourage people to keep their account and track where they are spending their money, because that also enables a person to be much more aware. And then another thing is that you have to, you know, live within your means. Some people, they have a certain idea about themselves which is outside their means, and that's why they're struggling. And so in that case, then they have to really be willing to come down in their level, get a less expensive accommodation, less expensive transport, and generally bring themselves to a point where they are living within their means. And that's a discipline.
Part and parcel of my job is to help people restructure their debts. Uh-huh. So that, and then restructure their debts with all their creditors so that they can at least live and not drown in financial sorrow. And I grant court orders to that effect on a daily basis. Mm. And it is a huge surprise to me how across the board, educated and uneducated, old and young, get themselves into such deep financial quagmire, as mm-hmm. it were, and are oblivious about the consequences. And then I look at it on a global level and I see, but hang on, never mind individuals being in such deep debt, there are countries who are in massive debt. What is it about the world that we live in that says, hey, let me see how much debt I can acquire?
Well, I think that we live in a debt-based economy, which is very financially very, very unwise. You know, the big business does well when it puts people in debt, when it tries to convey to people that they need this thing and they need that thing and they need the other thing, live now, pay later. This kind of culture is what we're in, which is the downside of materialism, and it ruins people. So I think what's really missing in this world is a serious financial education, but that would go totally against the foundation of the world's economy, which does very well if there are people who are very stupid financially. So there we are really at odds with the materialistic world. So I feel that we need to encourage people to be fulfilled from a spiritual source. You see, the material world says if you come and buy something, you will feel better. Well, you might feel better for a few minutes, but that's all. It's very ephemeral. It doesn't last long. And so we need to encourage people to fulfill their feelings of emptiness, not by spending money, taking alcohol or taking other drugs or whatever it is, but by really filling themselves with spiritual powers, spiritual light, spiritual love, because they're doing this because of emptiness. They're doing it because of being dysfunctional. It's part and parcel of dysfunctional life. And so care and family feeling and education, all of these things help a person to get on their feet properly and be responsible for their money, because you cannot start to be philanthropic until you've learned how to take care of yourself.
It is very common to see people define themselves by money, both
Yes.
young and old. And up until today, actually it's getting progressively worse, you're judged by the size of your car, the size of your house, the size of your everything. And people are literally societies across the globe define it in such a way. There may not be the class system in a lot of countries, but there, you still look at somebody who's wealthy and you think, ah, he's got it, or she's got it. Now, what does spirituality say to people as far as that is concerned?
Well, again, it's because you define yourself by your body and anything that is connected with your body. You know, one story that's often told in India to explain this to people is that Alexander the Great asked for his hands to be kept outside of his coffin so that people would know that when you die, you take nothing with you. Which is, I think it's an important message that, you know, you are not what you have. You are not your possessions, and your possessions also are not with you for very long. So it's really a part of the spiritual education to get a person to come to terms with the fact that they are not what they have. Even your body is a possession, you see. So really shifting that self-identification from the physical body and the physical possessions to what you are. So I am a soul, and then I, the soul, perform karma, which will cause any kind of benefit, including monetary benefit, to come to me. You see, another thing that is part of the spiritual education is, you know, the way other people think of you, if they think of you less, if you don't have the biggest car or the biggest house or whatever, you really get serious about not taking that on. You see, because either you're going to be under the influence of public opinion, or you're going to be in your self-respect. And when you're in your self-respect, you call the shots. You decide, okay, I'm going to live at this level, and if anybody doesn't find it impressive, that's neither here nor there. It's not the point, you know? And so I think that you're looking for inner richness, because that will go with you. And that will stay with you, and that then becomes a wealth that you can contribute to the quality of other people's life, which is actually much more real wealth than pieces of paper that contain a message, I promise to pay the bearer the equivalent of such and such amount of gold. Money is not based on the gold standard anymore. It's imaginary. And this is why people are in so much trouble.
Interesting. I heard a few years ago that 1% of the world owns 97% of the world's wealth. I found that so fascinating.
So it's very inequitable. And when you get that kind of inequitable arrangements between the wealthy and the poor, you have huge, huge numbers of people who are living in destitution, slavery, misery, and a small number of people who acquired that wealth probably in not a very spiritual way, then it creates an unendurable karmic debt, you see, because that wealth has been taken from those who have a right to it through some means or another. And there comes a point from a karmic angle where it's no longer sustainable, and then it just, you know, turns upside down.
So does spirituality then teach one how to have a healthy relationship with money? Because
yes,
there's some, obviously there's some people who come to the community with the little or no wealth, and there are some who come to the community with staggering amounts of wealth. So you teach both how to have a healthy relationship with money?
Definitely. Well, you know, there's not that many people with staggering amounts of wealth. Generally speaking, the people who come to the Brahma Kumaris are at a middle level. We don't tend to have people who are, you know, desperately poor. But people who are fairly poor, yes. And people who have to be very careful and count each penny in order to make their lives work out, we do see that. But, you know, most people are okay, you know. But nobody would say they are, or a few people okay. A small number of people would say, okay, I'm well off. But they also tend to think, okay, this wealth is a blessing from God. And so I will use a reasonable amount for myself, limited, and then the rest I will use it for philanthropic purposes. That's what the wealthier ones tend to do.
Okay. One can't help wonder, as you enter the headquarters of the Brahma Kumaris, to see these staggering, I'm referring here to Mount Abu, the staggering amount of buildings that are in existence and the amount of structures that are going up on a daily basis. One has to wonder, that money comes from where exactly?
As I said, it comes from all of us. And so we, you know, some of us have more, some of us have less, but everybody who comes here will make some level of contribution. And you see, the it's not only Mount Abu and here at Abu Road, at the bottom of the mountain, but there are a few places, and these places are to receive people. Here in Shantivan, we will receive groups of about up to 30,000. And if they can be, you know, adequately fed and water for washing, bathing, and adequate accommodation, our accommodation is, you know, comfortable. We have some better and some more general. It varies. But at the same time, you know, if you're going to receive large numbers of people, you have to cater for them. And this is why there are so many buildings. One of the things that we look at is, you know, renewable energy. So we have a power station that's going up, a solar power station.
Here in Mount Abu.
710 meter dishes to catch the sun, which is, as you can feel, very, very powerful here. And so this means that we are not going to be using our resources for fossil fuels. And so all of the electricity, the heat for the hot water, for people to bathe and for washing, and then also the steam for the food, because we have to feed 30,000 people three times a day. So that would be, you know, if you use wood, that would take out forests. If you use coal, that would also take out. But you use the solar, once you make the initial investment, it just runs by itself, aside from maintenance. We also have many people who have farms, and they will provide, you know, quantities of grain, quantities of fruit, quantities of vegetable. And so it works out that, you know, everybody will bring what they have in order to take care of the community and beyond.
It's quite easy to see that dressed in white clothes, both the men and women.
This is inexpensive.
It's inexpensive. And almost, well, everyone tends to look the same. So you cannot see on the outside.
No.
Was that one of the aims of the founder?
Well, this is why we have a uniform, so that any variations in people's wealth has sort of disappeared from view. And everybody adopts a simple lifestyle. Everybody eats the same food. You know, we have big laundries where all of this is washed. Obviously, you have to have maybe a couple of clothes changes every day to keep clean. And we also do a lot of the work, you see. Like in centers, the people who stay in the center, they will prepare the food, they will clean the house, they will do everything themselves. It's part of our way.
Yes. What's quite interesting to me is that it is quite clear, looking at, just the headquarters itself, but also looking at all of these buildings behind us, that this was built with income, and all of these buildings are in existence because of people who felt that they took benefit from the Brahmo Kumaris, and none of this comes cheap. This is an enormous amount of money.
But we learn how to get good for not too much.
Yeah.
You know, so that's again, you part of financial intelligence is that you learn how to select materials for building and whatever that is, suitable quality, but not extravagant, and not cut corners in such a way that you have to do it all over again. That's also not intelligent.
I see. Okay. Oh, interesting subject, money. Yes. Mm-hmm. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. This is how, this is the role that money plays in the Brahmo Kumaris. You'd heard from Sister Denise that the vast majority who do work at the centers do so in the capacity as volunteers. Nobody gets paid, and people advise as to what they should contribute should they ask, but it is left onto the shoulders of each one to contribute as they see fit, and no one is in any way forced to do anything. And that is how the Brahmo Kumaris have functioned and have succeeded as a spiritual community for the past 77 years. I found this very informative. Thank you, Sister Denise, and we hope to see all of you who have joined us today soon. Thank you and goodbye.